When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
And a good Monday afternoon, Saskatchewan. This is the Monday edition of The Sports Cage for Kinexus Arts Center. Brennan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you on this edition of the program. Still ahead in this edition, we will check in. It'll be like a U of R hour in the first hour. We will check in with Noah Picton, the stud quarterback from the U of R alumni who will be going into their Hall of Fame.
Rightfully so.
Doug Johnson from the Melville Millionaires, the head coach GM. Many are thinking he will win the coach of the year in the SJHL, and his team just clinched first over the weekend in their division. So we'll talk to him about that. David Benefield will also join us in hour two. We'll get his impressions on the Rough Riders offseason so far. And also I want to talk to him about coach Dave Ritchie, who passed away Saturday, 2 days ago. Yes.
And you know, as good an athlete as David Benefield was, and probably still is, I think his son might be better.
Yeah, his son's a college football player too, so it'll be interesting to hear a little bit more about that. And Dave was a good analyst. He did some work with the CFL on CBC. He did some stuff on this radio station, you might remember, with Scott Schultz, a very short-lived program during the time he was here, but very memorable. Mm-hmm. And also the big reason why I want to talk to David Benefield about Dave Ritchie is some of you might remember the 94 Grey Cup, which very much had the look and feel. Get this mic out of the way. I want to see your pretty face. Well, That Grey Cup was one of the most memorable ever, maybe the most memorable ever to a lot of people. I don't think our listeners on the prairies would ever suggest it was the most memorable Grey Cup. 89 will always top them all. Mm-hmm. But because it had the look and feel of an Olympic event, it was the BC Lions against the Baltimore No Names. Right. And that was during the American expansion that a lot of us weren't taking seriously through year one because the Sacramento Gold Miners had struggled. In year two, all of the other American teams had struggled. And then Baltimore went into Winnipeg and surprised a lot of us in sub-zero temperatures and somehow beat that high-powered Winnipeg Blue Bomber squad that was led by Matt Dunnigan. They were just a better fit for the cold because of the running game, etc. Mm-hmm. So it's like Grey Cup week 94. All of a sudden, everybody's like, wow, you mean this is happening now? The cup could go south.
Oh, dear.
And the BC Lions won that Grey Cup, and it was a great game.
Didn't Louis Pasaglia kick like 100 field goals that game? Or he kicked the winning one.
He kicked the winning one. You know what? I always kind of felt like Lou was a little bit overrated. Because he was always up against Ridgeway, and because Ridgeway didn't have the longevity that Lou had.
Didn't get to kick in a dome either.
Right, so he never got a lot of the fanfare that Lou got. Now, to be fair, Ridgeway set the record since fallen, but in 1987, a 60-yarder, and there was one point when four out of the five record field goals were at Taylor Field because it was so windy. But you're right, he would have had a lot of kicks that would have gone against the wind. But I digress. That was a great game, and I've heard Danny McManus say half our roster was American, but that day we were all Canadians, and it was like Canada versus US, and just a very, very special moment. And I thought it would be fitting on Dave Ritchie's passing, or 48 hours after his passing, that we'd have someone like Benny on the program to share some thoughts on the old ball coach. Hour three, Taylor Shire will join us to discuss the Montana's Briar, the heartbreak that it ended in Sunday night. I don't think anybody's too bitter about the way the Briar went. I don't think we could have hoped for it to go much better other than the result on Sunday. But I'm not sure everybody expected Mike McEwen to get all the way to the final when the week started.
No, that was tremendous that he actually managed to get that far and played very well heading up to the final. But let's face it, in a one-and-done situation, who would you rather have than Brad Gushue? Brad Gushue. That's basically it. Good luck betting against him.
I ran into my buddy Colin Steed at the Leisure Center. We took our kids swimming on Sunday, and he just happened to be there, and he's from Newfoundland, and he's wearing a hoodie, and he's got a little pouch that's sewn on, and it's got the Newfoundland flag. And I said, you know, he and I have gambled on football years and years ago, and I said, since you love to gamble so much, we should do a wager on the game tonight. And he says, I'll take that wager.
Oh,
and
of course.
I wasn't going to bet against Brad Gushue, so even if I still gambled, which I really don't.
It's overrated.
You can join in on the discussion at toll free. You can call us 1-866-767-0620. Follow us on social media on Facebook or X at SportsCage is the handle. And the Capital Ford Lincoln text line at 306-936-6262. I also want to remind everybody that we are giving away a pair of tickets every day this week to the Regina Spring Home Show.
Oh.
It's not the Briar. It's not Jody Messina.
No.
But the Spring Home Show is pretty good.
It is for a number of reasons. Probably top of my list is it means spring is finally here.
Exactly. That's what I think about too.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't have a backyard to renovate, you dream about one day having a backyard to renovate and having all the backyard furniture.
You know what? So. If somebody there has a booth that will tell me how to wipe maple bugs off the face of the earth, I'm in. Name your price. I'm in. They're already in my back entryway. It's March. That's not fair.
Two weekends from this weekend, March 22nd to 24th. Check it out. I'm sure they have it.
Okay.
It'll be there.
I'm in.
Still ahead, we will check in with U of R track and field star John Podbelski, who came away with 1, 2, 3 medals at the U Sport National Track and Field event in Winnipeg. He is next. You're listening to The Sports Cage, brought to you by the Kinexus Arts Center on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Saskatchewan's best coverage of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders is on The Sports Cage, right here on the mighty 620 CKRM.
Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you, with help from Colson Scholes on the Monday edition of The Sports Cage. Don't forget to text the key word if you want to wear tickets to the Regina Spring Home Show, which is happening, I said, 2 weekends from now. It's just under 2 weeks from now, March 22nd to March 24th. And the key word today is spring. Text spring to 306-936-6262. And we will announce the winner before the end of the program when we go off the air a little bit later.
Two weekends from this past weekend. You were close.
I was close. Any other takeaways from the Briar? I was kind of excited that we were going to see some different faces. And at the end, the one different face that we saw was Mike McEwen.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it seemed like everything normalized. Like Gushue was a perfect example of how things went. He started with a struggle, got it together, and steamrolled from there.
At the start of the week when we were on location, it was shaping up like this is going to be the biggest upside down ever. All the top teams are going to finish at the bottom. It did, as you said, it leveled out quite a bit, but still it was nice to see some different teams like Jamie Cooey making it to the playoffs. That was cool. And of course Saskatchewan, nobody's going to complain about that. And the fan support, over 100,000 for the entire tournament. That's pretty good.
I thought it was cool to see Jamie Cooey do better than Kevin for a change.
Yep.
And it was too bad that it blew up for him a little bit in that playoff game against Saskatchewan. Obviously I wasn't cheering for him against Saskatchewan because for obvious reasons, but I like his style. Like there was a lot of talk about how he's a riverboat gambler. He doesn't play the conservative style. He goes for the big ends and he rolled the dice, and quite often the dice comes up snake eyes like it did in that playoff game. But throughout the week he was rolling. So I hope he sticks with it. And
well, I hope so too. The Cooey brothers are going to have lots to talk about it, you know, Christmas dinner or Easter or whatever's coming up for them.
Kevin had a bad week. I like Kevin, but it was, again, it was nice to see some new faces. So I was okay with that.
Sport needs that.
I hear a lot of complaining about the way Botcher plays. Some people say that they're just too defensive. They try to blank too many ends. And John Hodge came on to talk CFL with us and he pointed out that he's a bigger fan of women's curling because you don't see so many blanks. And as I watched, I kind of agree with them, but there's still enough strategy, I think, with the five-rock rule. You can't blank too many ends. We saw teams deliberately blank and get themselves into trouble because they were trying to just keep the hammer and
curling karma.
fall behind that way. Right now, it is time to go down to the Western Pizza Hotline. We are joined by Jonathan Podbelski, who is a track and field star with the University of Regina Cougar men's track team. Just got home from the U Sport Nationals track and field meet in Winnipeg and captured all three medals for the school. A couple of silvers, one in the 4x800 meter relay, another in the 1000 meter dash, and a bronze in the 1500 meter dash. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be on it.
Is this the biggest accomplishment you've had as a track star?
I'd have to say it's not. If I'm being completely honest with you, I'd say my biggest accomplishment would be back in July when I won my double gold at the Canadian Championships.
Nice.
Very cool. Talk to us a little bit about this event. Were you competing with schools from every corner of the country, or are there only a handful of schools that can compete in this event?
Yeah, so it was absolutely everybody from across the country. The big thing is, though, you have to qualify, right? So some of the smaller schools had a lower representation, and some of the bigger ones had tons of athletes, and that's kind of just how it goes. So big schools like Guelph, you'll see an entire roster lining the track, cheering on their teammates, but smaller schools, like ourselves, Regina, we have a smaller roster coming up who qualified, so we have to cheer louder.
I guess so. When I was watching the last Olympics, I guess that would have been in Tokyo, a year after the pandemic, or mm-hmm. when the pandemic was winding down. I forget the athlete's name. I think he was for Team USA, and he had an option to go play in the National Football League, and he chose not to. He wanted to focus on track, and he wasn't a sprinter. He was in the hurdles.
Yeah, that's right. I forget his name. I think Devin something. Yeah, Devin Allen, maybe, or something.
You remember better than I do, but...
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. And he gave up his NFL dreams there to go and compete in the Olympics, yeah.
But I didn't think that was silly at all. They were almost talking about it like it was silly, because if you go to the NFL, you get a nice payday and yada, yada, yada. But
yeah,
if you play that...
I can't imagine the money is quite as good in the Olympic sponsorship deals than it would be in the NFL, but...
Probably not. And look, I love the great game of football as much as anybody, but I'm also a little bit concerned about what we're hearing about some of these head injuries that these poor guys are taking. And I think that having your marbles when you're old and gray is something you can't really put a price tag on. And so I came to realize watching, saying, maybe he made a good decision. Good for him. It's like my mind did a 180. That's one nice thing about the sport, isn't it? Is that you don't have those kind of risks that you do in some of the contests.
Yeah, totally. You're not worried about that concussion. You're not worried about getting banged up. And running is difficult, and it's hard on the muscles, and there's the odd injury here and there. But it's not like when I used to play football and you'd be scared of getting hit by the guy running drills. So it does have that benefit for sure.
Well, that sort of ties into the next question, John, because I've seen you and your dad around Mosaic Stadium a time or two. No, I'm not stalking you. I know your dad, so I assume you're the guy with him. Who's a bigger Ryder fan, you or Ron?
I can't say I'm the bigger Ryder fan yet, but I'm definitely getting there. We love going to Ryder games. It's excellent. I have to say football is my favorite sport after track.
So when you broke your dad's heart by saying, no, I'm going to concentrate on running and football I'm done with except to watch. I'm kidding. I doubt you broke his heart. But what went through your mind in terms of, okay, this is my sport. This is the one I'm going to specialize in.
Yeah, I think he was actually happy I didn't pursue that path just because he knows how dangerous football can be. And I'm not a very big guy. You know, I'm only 5'9 or 5'10. 150 pounds. I could get banged around. So, I think he was happy. And ever since I kind of got really competitive with the sport, he's starting to learn more and learn about the tactics that are involved in track and field. And he's just really getting involved. So it's awesome to see. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, is this something that you plan to pursue beyond your college career?
It's always kind of a thought. In the back of my mind, the one concern a lot of runners have about that kind of thing is pro runners don't make very much money. They're living very, very, a lot of them are poor, to be completely honest with you. Even the ones with big sponsorship deals. So unless you can really rise up to the top, There's not a lot of money in the sport. Like, at the University of Regina here, we have a guy named Dushyant Itsekiri. He's a pro runner with Nike, and he's gone to the Olympics a couple times, been in the World Championships, and even he himself tells us, like, oh, well, he doesn't even make very much money, if any, at some years, so it's definitely a struggle.
One of your predecessors, and this is a few years back now with the Cougars, is just about to be inducted into the U of R Sports Hall of Fame, Kelly Wiebe. And Kelly went on to an outstanding university career as a runner, both track and cross country, which you, of course, are doing as well. When he's back in town, April 12th for that, I guess, a luncheon, you going to pick his brain a little bit in terms of what's pro running like? Where can a guy go? Because he's been there. He's done that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely ask him a couple things. I hope I get invited to that luncheon. That'd be awesome. He's definitely a legend around here. People are always talking about his 3,000-meter school record that he's still holding on to, 806, I believe it is, and how they think I could maybe take it one day. So, yeah, no, it's definitely awesome. I'll ask him how he found it here at U of R and how he found it after U of R as well.
And you're a long-distance guy, too, aren't you? Like, you're not... doesn't look to me, and it, just based on what I've seen, that sprinting, I'm sure you can sprint, but really your specialty is this long distance running, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say so for sure, yeah. Cross country I also run as well, mm-hmm. which is typically 8 kilometers. It's quite the distance for a track guy, but I definitely take part in that, and that's awesome in the fall as well.
You're the hare, not the rabbit. what's your best event?
It's tight. I'd say either the 800, the 1,000, or the 1,500. If you look at IAAF points, it'd probably suggest my 1,500 is my best event.
And for those of us listening who didn't get a chance to watch this event, we were too busy watching the Brier. Tell our listeners who are some of the track stars at the U of R that maybe some of us have never heard of.
Yeah, definitely. Storm Zabaki, I'll definitely have to mention him. He's a sprinter, upcoming sprinter. He's the same age as me. He joined the U of R last year as a rookie as well as I did. He's done awesome this year. I think he was facing some injuries this year, so he didn't compete at Can West or U Sports. That's too bad. But I also, Precious, I forget his last name, but he's an awesome guy. He's just always got a smile, and he's also a 60-meter sprinter. Can't forget to include him. Braden Meintofer, he's my training partner. He just finished his last year of eligibility this year, so he's a senior now. Daniel Eisworth, he's definitely an upcoming star. He kind of just broke out this year in the 600 meter and was ranked second in the country just for a bit there, and really, really proved himself this year.
Funny you mentioned Zablocki. His sister's quite an athlete, too. She's a star player for the Regina Rebels under-18 women's female hockey team and leading them into the semifinals. Just a little tangent. I thought I'd go off for just one sec.
Yeah, double Team Canada member, too, as well, with track and hockey, I heard. So that's awesome.
Right. Yeah. Pretty athletic family. Well, what about you? Where'd you get your athletic genes? Was Ron a runner back in the day, or your mom, or what happened?
I think he was a hobby jogger. I'm not sure. I think he entered in the odd relay at QCX, the marathon there in Regina. But I don't know if he competitively did anything much further than that. I know he liked running, though. He loved running. And on my mom's side, her dad played hockey. He was really into hockey in his teenage years. So maybe there's a little overlap there with hockey, but other than that, I'm not sure.
I know there was one point in my life where I was kind of at a crossroads where I needed to, how do I say this, help myself physically. Mm-hmm. And one of the big ways I dropped 38 pounds in 4 months, I've since put it all back on, mm-hmm. but was the long distance running. And I was surprised how much I grew to really love it. What kind of advice would you give to anybody who's trying to better themselves by getting into long distance running? I know you're not a marathon runner when we're talking about, you know, 1,000 meter, 1,500 meters, but is there any advice you could give to anybody who's just trying to figure out where to start?
Yeah, I actually just had a buddy who who's trying to train for the Marines, I believe it is, for running, and he needs to run a certain time, and he came to me for advice, and he said, you know, like, I don't really like going out on these long runs. Like, it's hard on my knees. It's hard on my joints. Like, and what I told him, I said, take it one day at a time, start small, and just build up from there. And he started with just 5 minutes down, and now I think he's all the way up to like 30 minutes. So as long as you keep building, progressing along, and I think you'll learn to like running over time. And as much of a chore as it may feel like right now, it's actually a really enjoyable way of getting exercise.
I think the overriding theme that I heard in what you just said and what I've heard from other people who give the same kind of advice is 1% better every day. And
exactly.
Don't try to push it too much too fast. Hey, listen, thanks for this. Congratulations on a nice haul over the weekend. And we will watch with added interest to see where your track and field journey takes you the rest of the way.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be on the show. It was awesome.
All right. That is Jonathan Podbelski from the U of R track team. Again, winning all three medals in Winnipeg at the national championship, a couple of silvers, one in the 4x800 relay, another in the 1,000 meter, and a bronze in the 1,500 meter dash.
Prediction? When the U of R, and I believe it's within the next month, names its male and female athletes of the year, I think the name Podbelski, if it isn't front and center, it will be very soon.
At least our sources tell us. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's just a prediction.
Still ahead on this edition of the program, we will check in with Doug Johnson, the head coach and GM of the Melville Millionaires. You are listening to The Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM. Time for your Sherwood Co-op sports ticker. Sherwood Co-op will pump your fuel while you stay warm inside your car, or just pay at the pump all winter long. Busy opening to the free agent schedule in the National Football League, probably getting the most attention. Kirk Cousins, a quarterback late of the Minnesota Vikings, has cashed in with a four-year, $180 million contract with the Atlanta Falcons. What else? Russell Wilson moving from the Denver Broncos over to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Gardner Minshew is going to sign with the Oakland, I almost called them the Oakland Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders. And Saquon Barkley leaves the New York Giants for the Philadelphia Eagles. Lots of changes happening in the National Football League that's been getting an awful lot of attention. Coming up later on the Sports Cage, we will have more chatter about the 2024 Montana's Briar with Taylor Shire. That is your Monday sports ticker for Sherwood Co-op.
Nobody covers your team like our team. This is the Sports Cage on the Mighty 620 CKRM.
Brendan McGuire and Pete Pascoe with you from 620 CKRM World Headquarters. Still ahead on this edition of the program, we'll check in with David Benefield, former CFL star, and get some thoughts on the passing of Hall of Fame coach Dave Ritchie. That is still ahead in hour two. But right now, we go back out on the Western Pizza Hotline. It's like we got a U of R theme this first hour.
A little bit.
And we are joined by one of the latest inductees into the University of Regina Athletic Hall of Fame, former U of R Rams quarterback Noah Picton joins us. Noah, welcome to the Sports Cage.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
When did you find out you were going into the U of R Athletic Hall of Fame?
This would have been, I think I got a note from Lisa Robertson, the athletic director of U of R, back in maybe December. And then after that, sort of Mark McConkey gave me a call to let me know as well. So a little bit of time's passed, but they said keep it quiet for a while. So I tried to do my best there.
Well, you did a pretty good job anyways. We didn't hear anything, but I was just going to say, you know, you're still a young guy. You're still only 28, and you're already going in the Hall of Fame. Are you surprised that it happened this quickly for you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say surprised. I quite truly hadn't given it much thought. But, you know, obviously grateful and feel pretty fortunate and lucky to be recognized. With that, it's any sort of individual accolades or accomplishments in a sport like football, it's obviously credit to a lot of others rather than just myself. But to answer your question, you know, maybe it did catch me a bit by surprise, but proud and excited nonetheless.
No, maybe update the folks on what you're up to now. Last time I saw you, you were helping out coaching quarterbacks with the Rams. Is that still the case, or are you concentrating on your business life?
Yeah, no. So I'm, you know, utilizing my education a little bit more than my football ability these days. I'm working as a investment analyst at PFM Capital. I would say a investment fund manager here in the city. On the side, I do still coach quarterbacks. You know, not the Rams ones, but just minor quarterbacks or high school athletes here in the city, and that sort of you know, allows me to get my football fix, if you will. So fair enough going on right now.
I would imagine you still keep on in terms of what's going on with the Rams and who's playing and who's playing where. Where I'm going with that is they had to start a kid that was probably going to redshirt last year, 17-year-old out of BC, Owen Sibon, and he just made it impossible for them to do so. He played that well. Did you get to watch him much? Do you think he's the real deal?
You know, I did get to watch Owen and the Rams play this year. Very impressed with his ability. You know, physically for his age, but then also mentally how he processed the game. You know, it looked like he, you know, understood what the offense was trying to accomplish and how to execute it. So I've had a chance to get to know Owen a little bit just this past off season. Outstanding individual. Looking forward to watching him this upcoming season with the Rams. But after getting to know him, not surprised with how he performed this past season. Just seeing how he operates and looks at the game of football.
Noah Pickton, star, legendary U of R Rams quarterback, soon to be inducted into the University of Regina Athletic Hall of Fame, is our guest on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. Noah, there's been a lot of discussion the last few years about the Canadian quarterback. I'm sure you've heard that discussion ad nauseum, and it's been a really long time since we've had meaningful star quarterbacks in the CFL, and that seems to be shifting again. They've made changes at the pro level where the quarterbacks are no longer exempt from the ratio. That was really, I don't even think it's debatable, that was really a regressive policy that really hurt mm-hmm. the ability of Canadian quarterbacks to develop. We watched Trey Ford. Seems like the discussion is heating up again, and we're starting to see meaningful change. Do you ever wonder if maybe you just missed that window of meaningful change?
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily think so. I look back at my time, the brief stints in CFL camps, and you know, having the opportunity to try out for a CFL team or two, I'm comfortable saying that, you know, I wasn't there as a player to make it in the league. With that being said, I think as a minor footballer, grassroots football is improving, coaches is improving in Canada. I think you're starting to see more quarterbacks who are going to be able to play in the CFL. I do agree with you that it's regressive in what they've done with the QB and the ratio. However, guys like Nathan Rourke, who, you know, everyone's aware of, his younger brother Curtis Rourke, I think is coming up through the U.S. college system right now, and obviously a guy like Trey Ford, who's been playing in the CFL and having some success. Those guys are really, you know, doing their job right now on behalf of the Canadian quarterbacks. So I don't view my time as sort of missing the boat. I think if I was good enough, I would have been playing in the CFL. I have no ill feelings towards that, but hope to see the trend continue going forward with like the Rourke brothers or Trey Ford and then the up and coming quarterbacks. You know, I fully expect that we're going to continue to see more and more you know, guys coming out of Canada who have the ability and are given the opportunity to play in the CFL.
Noah, for folks who aren't familiar with your accomplishments, well, for shame, first and foremost. But anyway, 2016, Hec Crichton winner. You finished your career with the Rams as the U Sports all-time leader in career passing yards. Ton of school single-season records. Is there anything in that list that you're most proud of, or maybe something else?
Most proud of? You know, I think a lot of pride in the, you know, being the first Regina Ram to win the Hec Crichton. I think obviously it's, like I mentioned before earlier in the call here, credit to the outstanding teammates and coaches I was surrounded with. But it's always neat to sort of be the first of anything, or the only, I guess, in this case. You know, like I mentioned, game of football, you know, one player relies on, you know, 11 other guys on the field. Quarterback at times will say it's one of the more difficult positions, but, you know, physically, it actually might be one of the easier ones. So a lot of effort from the other guys who contributed to my success. But, I think that 2016 was special for a number of years. There's the awards, but then, you know, just getting to experience things like the October 1st, the first game in Mosaic Stadium. That was a lot of fun with my teammates and just, you know, getting to play in front of a sizable crowd and experience that, or be the first group to play in that stadium, was also really memorable that year. But a lot of fond memories across the board with my time on the Rams.
One of the neat things, I think, from your perspective is you also got to share a lot of those memories with someone you're very close to, your cousin, Mitchell. How proud are you when you see the career he's carved out as a CFL player?
Yeah, you know, that one's tough to put into words. I've been out of football for 5 years, but I'm sort of overcome with emotions every time I watch him play at Mosaic and see him running out of the tunnel with the team. You know, watching a guy who you grew up with and you sort of learned the game of football with and played with every single season, to see him continue to live out his dream with the Rough Riders is pretty special. And, you know, I think I finally understand the phrase, like, living vicariously through someone else. You know, watching him play at Mosaic and play for the team we grew up cheering for, it's pretty cool. And, you know, I can't express how proud I am of him to be doing what he's doing.
There was some news late last year about the Vanier Cup in 2025 coming to Mosaic Stadium, and I'm in this chat with all the other contributors to Three Down Nation, and instantly they were just jumping all over it, and I've never understood why they never came out west more often. I was at the 06 Vanier Cup in Saskatoon. It was a great time. It couldn't have gone better, and it was cold.
Was that the really cold
one? Yeah, it was minus 35 with the wind chill, but it was a great time. I remember Kevin Waugh and I came down from the press box, and we just couldn't believe, because we were freezing and we were out there for 10 minutes doing post-game interviews. We were shocked at how 14,000 people had sat through all that for hours. But I guess the big reason why U-Sport has never wanted to come out west more often is there's a mindset that they want to have the game close to all these other schools in Ontario, Quebec, hoping that whoever gets into it, their fan base can travel easily and they'll sell the tickets that they need to sell. If the Rams or the Huskies don't get into the Vanier Cup in 2025, there's some concern that maybe they won't, you know, be able to sell the tickets, or the fan bases won't be able to travel as easy. What was your first thought, Noah, when you heard that we were going to host the Vanier Cup? And any predictions for how that's going to pan out as far as a crowd and how the locals will embrace all that?
I think it's exciting. You know, Saskatchewan's a football province. And, you know, so my first thoughts were obviously the Rams are going to be excited to sort of shoot towards, you know, hopefully playing in the game like that. You want to talk about a external motivator. I can't think of a better one than that. And potentially, you know, playing in a home Vanier Cup game. So, I think it's great for the University of Regina. Credit to Lisa Robinson and her team, and you know, all the folks that obviously helped out putting that bid in. I suspect it was a difficult process to even, you know, be granted that game. But I think it's certainly exciting for the city to be hosting something like that. And like I said before, the players I suspect are going to be as motivated as ever to build this season and gain a little bit of momentum coming out of last year and then working towards that 2025 Vanier Cup game. So, you know, you certainly hope that there's a good crowd. I think Regina should and probably will get excited for it. So you'd like to see the marketing of the game done properly and making sure that the general public is aware that it's going on. I'm sure that will be the case. So I think it's going to be great for the city, great for the university, and hopefully great for the Rams if they're able to be in the game.
Now, here's a question you may never have been asked before, so this could be fun. You cannot answer Mitchell Pickton. Having said that, who's the second best receiver you've ever played with? The guy on second down, you're scrambling for your life, you know he'll be there.
What's what's kind of funny, that's a good question. What's kind of funny, though, is like through the years, I was fortunate to play for 5 years. So my first and second year when I was playing, the answer is going to be different than my when I was in my fifth year. But, you know, guys that I immediately think about are someone like Ryan Schienbein, Addison Richards, Mitch Thompson. You know, those guys were all very good receivers, but you know, we were fortunate with the Rams to have lots of guys. I think that, you know, they were given the nickname Receiver U for a reason. I felt comfortable throwing to really anybody on the field. So tough to answer, but yeah, I think
that's like a pretty good list.
Yeah, no, it's tough to piece the list together. I'm certain that I'm missing some guys. You could throw to Atlee Simon out of the backfield. That was always a safe decision. Yeah, no, I don't think there's any right or wrong answer there. Everyone's a good option.
I like how you did the receiver U reference, because I thought of something different, and that's the quarterbacks that have gone through the U of R. Darrell Leeson, of course, started things off with a bang in the second year of the program. Later, Teal Orban put up some eye-popping numbers, and there's yourself, and there were a few others. Do you feel like you're kind of part of a fraternity that's growing? The program now, 26 of the program, or 25, because there was no season, but for the pandemic. But, you know, it's a short-lived college program. You've had some pretty good passers, and I bet that's something you've thought about too.
I think so, yeah. Even coming into the Rams, to your point, like I was very aware of the history of quarterbacks to come through the program even before they were in university. You know, I'll throw my dad, Dean, into the mix. But a lot of guys that I looked up to, and I remember being a little kid, you know, 6, 7 years old, we'd go to, at that time, they're still practicing out at Curry Field and watching Darrell Leeson practicing. And at that point in time, like Jason Claremont was on the team, Neil Hughes on the team, those guys. But then, you know, coming through elementary school and high school, watching Teal Orban do his thing. And then, you know, I was able to, you know, work with Mark Mueller. Obviously, he was my quarterback coach, but Mark did a great job of maybe taking me under his wing. I was training with the team through high school and got to learn from Mark and you know, become a friend of his. So very grateful to be a part of that quarterback group or the list of guys to play for the U of R. And, you know, something that I expect the current quarterbacks to keep that tradition alive of, you know, good quarterback play at the school. I think they're in good shape right now, obviously, with the dudes that they have in the QB room.
When I was rattling off names, I'm like, I missed somebody. And then you said Mark Mueller. How did I miss his name? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Mark's doing his thing. So looking forward to seeing what he can do with the Riders offense this year. And yeah, really, really excited for him.
I'm glad you mentioned your dad. And given his history with the organization, given your history, as you mentioned, practicing with them all through high school, was it basically preordained you were going to be a Ram? Like, if you went anywhere else, was that going to break up the family?
Yeah, no, I don't think that was ever considered. And, you know, it wasn't like that was ever forced on me or pushed on me. All I ever wanted to do when I was a kid was play for the Regina Rams. You go back to early, you know, early Christmas, I was a young child, and I got a Rams helmet. And I'm pretty sure, you know, my parents have a photo of me crying, just, you know, how being out of, like, happy tears at that age. And that was just always sort of the dream as a kid, play for the Regina Rams. It's all I ever thought about or dreamed of. So I wasn't necessarily the guy that dreamed of playing in the NFL or even the CFL. It was always to play for the Rams. And as I got a little bit older, Frank McChrystal and Bernie Schmidt were kind enough to let me, you know, hang around and train with the team. And that was a big contributor to my development as a quarterback. But also, you know, there was really no recruiting process. I knew this is the school I want to go to. So long as they allowed me on the team, that was going to be the case for me.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Frank and Bernie. I know they've had a big hand in your development, as well as a lot of others. Noah Pickton, congratulations. April 12th, induction into the University of Regina Athletic Hall of Fame. Enjoy the moment. It's not every day you get to go into the Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. No, I appreciate that.
All right, and that is our guest on the Western Pizza Hotline. We'll be back with more of the Sports Cage. Doug Johnson, the head coach of the Melville Millionaires, still ahead on the Almighty 620 CKRM.
It's time to step into the Radio Octagon. You're tuned to the Sports Cage on Saskatchewan Sports Radio, 620 CKRM.
Monday edition of the Sports Cage. Brendan McGuire, Pete Pasco, and Colson Scholes with you on this edition of the program. Still Breyer talk and David Benefield coming up. Just got finished with Noah Pickton. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Pete.
Okay.
And of all the great quarterbacks in U of R Ram history that
really?
You mentioned, you knew I was going to stick this to you. Who's your favorite? You don't have to pick the best. Who is your favorite? I'll give you mine. Darrell Eason. Only because that's really what got it started. And I remember listening to the games on CKRM. I think I went to one or two when they were still a junior program, when they won back-to-back-to-back championships. And Chad Eamon, I think, quarterbacked the last one in the three-peat. And then they went away, and Leeson went away to the University of Calgary Dinos.
Yep.
And the first year of the Rams, they went 0-8 at the U Sport level.
Yep.
It had a different name back then, but we call it U Sport, so that's what we'll go with. And Leeson just wasn't a fit in the offense that they had in Calgary. And he even, back in those days, it was harder to transfer. He had to forego a year of eligibility in order to come back. I think he had to sit out for a year. I think he even lost a year of eligibility. I should maybe double-check that. But he came back, and he had 2 years left, and it was like the magic wasn't gone. We missed those glory days during the first year of the Rams when they went 0-8, and then he came back, and it's like he just picked up right where they left off, and the magic was here again. So
year two, they went to the Vanier.
And that was the year they went 4-4, but the offense was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't stop anybody on defense. That was a whole other issue. So
Neil Hughes could not be stopped at running back.
But that was my choice, and he's still my choice. I just don't think that'll ever change. What about you?
That's like being asked to pick your favorite child. I mean, that's tough. They've all been, and I've interviewed them all, going back to Darrell Eason, I think Eason was the first because he was still playing junior back then. I mean, the guy we just talked to, very high up on my list, Noah Pickton. Mark Mueller is as well. In terms of great guy to watch and just a good guy to talk to, I think Teal Orban might be 1 or 1A on my list. He was tremendous. He had a cup of coffee with the Riders, which was, you know, unfortunate for him because he had all the skills. It's just nobody was going to take him seriously as a Canadian quarterback. He got in the fourth quarter of a meaningless exhibition game, actually moved the ball, which none of the guys ahead of him did, and then they ended up letting him go. So, yep, I'll go with Teal.
I think a lot of people didn't realize how regressive that policy was when all three quarterbacks were completely exempt from the policy. It didn't matter. Like, you wouldn't get credit for a starter for the longest time, for a Canadian starter. So for the longest time, you had to have 37 players on the roster, 20 had to be Canadian, 14 could be American. They could all be starters. Then you had three quarterback slots, and it didn't matter. And what people said, well, if he's the best quarterback, he'll be the quarterback. But what they didn't realize was that Canadians are always at a premium.
Mm-hmm.
You're always looking for more Canadians so you can fill that roster spot. So if having a Canadian quarterback doesn't help you with the quota,
right?
If you have a good athlete, you're instantly going to think, how do we switch him so he helps us?
Mm-hmm.
Like Brad Sinopoli, I still wonder how good of a CFL career he could have had as a quarterback if teams weren't trying to convert him to something else. And then in Ottawa, he was a slot back, and he was a very good slot back. But I think he could have been a really good quarterback, too.
Going back even further, Chris Flynn tore up U Sports. Back-to-back Heck Crichton Award winner. St. Mary's, I believe, out east. Never really got a serious look in the CFL, and that's just tragic because he may have been the best Canadian quarterback in my lifetime so far.
It's like we talked about with Glenn Suter last week. I said if they actually developed star Canadian quarterbacks, the next time there's a pandemic and they go looking for a handout to the federal government, maybe the government will help.
But if
they're not doing it, there's not a chance. And we saw that last time.
True.
Still ahead, we will check in with Doug Johnson from the Melville Millionaires and David Benefield. You are listening to the Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Monday edition of The Sports Cage for Kinexus Arts Center. Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco. Don't forget, you can chime in through the Capital Ford Lincoln text line. Capital Ford Lincoln, Saskatchewan's number one Ford retailer. CapitalFordLincoln.com. Still ahead in hour two, we'll check in with David Benefield, get his thoughts on the offseason that has been for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. But right now, we go out onto the Western Pizza Hotline to talk hockey with our next guest, who is the coach GM of the Melville Millionaires. Doug Johnson won an SJHL championship with the Nipawin Hawks back in 2018. And his team, the Millionaires, are riding a six-game win streak and culminated in clinching the division crown for the Viterra division over the weekend. And some are even suggesting that he's in the running for the SJHL Coach of the Year. Doug, welcome to the Sports Cage.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate being here.
When I look at who you might line up against in the postseason, it looks to me like Weyburn or Estevan are probably going to be the first team you face. Is that how you see it at this point?
Well, the league does it a little different. They just re-rank everybody 1 through 8. So we're probably going to be lined up against Humboldt or Battleford right now.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm glad you cleared that up for us. I was going to ask you, a few years ago, there was that terrible story with what happened with the Humboldt Broncos, and I know you were right next to it, right in the middle of it.
Yep.
So many coaches get so ensconced into the sport that success, wins, losses become, you know, the only way to measure success, and it's almost like life or death. Did going through that experience change you as a coach?
Oh, I think it changed everybody that dealt with it one way or the other. And I don't know if it changed me as a coach, but it, you know, more as a person, just offered a lot different perspective and, you know, make sure you never take things for granted and make sure you hold your loved ones a lot tighter anytime you can.
When I look at the way this season has shaken down for your Melville Millionaires, it looks like you have a lot of games where you're giving up one goal or two goals, and the games that you're not winning, it's games where you're not scoring or you're scoring very little. Are you a more defensive team?
Yeah, people that know me know we have to focus on defense, and it's not just here, it's any stop, because you look at the top teams that in the NHL, they're teams that focus on defense. You know, the great teams have offense and defense, but I always use the term offense is like a cat. It's finicky. It comes and goes. You never know if it's going to be here or not. And defense has to be like a dog. It's loyal. It's there every day. It's by your side, and it has to be a constant. So we are a defensive team, but trust me, there's nobody that loves a great skill play in hockey more than me. But we know we want to win games. We want to develop our players to move on. And if they can't play defense at the next level, they're not going to get an opportunity.
I don't think I've ever heard an analogy like that about defense first. That was really good. I think if you're going to convince fans like Pete or I that defensive hockey is great, I think you just figured out the way to do it, how to sell us on it.
I heard that a long time ago from a coach, and it always stuck with me, and it's so true, because offense, you can have the sweetest play in the world, but sometimes a goalie's just a little better, and sometimes that puck luck isn't with you, so you got to make sure the defense is there night in, night out.
Who are some of the star players on your roster who have been, for lack of a better term, pulling the boat along?
Well, it starts up front with, you know, I would say we have a big five right now, maybe six, but Caden Drury is a guy that leads our team in points, and he's a little unsung. Not a lot of people talk to him, but he's a Swiss Army knife. He's on the power play, on the penalty kill. Luke Beadle is the second leading scorer in the league for rookies. Just had an outstanding season. Bradley Binock, a pickup we got at the trade deadline, has been on fire since he's come here. And then you have Jaden Iogan, one of the fastest guys in the league that, you know, is deceptive as anybody I've ever dealt with. And then from there on your back end, it's Colby Ball. He drives a boat on our power play. When he's going, the power play's going, and, you know, he's been as good as anybody is in the whole league. And obviously in net, Will Dyke, he's just been outstanding. 3 shutouts in the last 5 games and given up 2 goals in the last 5 games. He's on a hot streak like I really haven't seen from anybody in a long time.
So it's been your goaltending as much as it's been the defensive play that have kept the numbers down.
Yeah, 100%. And your best player has to be your goaltender, because hockey's 70% goaltending, and when it's bad goaltending, it's 90%. And it's, you know, you need to have a goalie there, last line of defense. But then it's the forwards in front of them, when they own the puck, when they are able to run a cycle and own possess the puck in the offensive zone, just eliminates that defensive zone time, eliminates wear and tear. And then our back end is done an outstanding job taking away time and space and protecting the middle, taking bodies, keeping people to the outside and protecting the interior.
Doug, you mentioned your most likely first-round playoff matchup. Battleford, certainly not an easy ask or the Humboldt, but would it be fair to say most teams in the league, and probably every team in the league, if they could, was going to avoid that number eight spot? Because that means the number one team in the country, Flin Flon, and those trips to the Whitney Forum are tough on anybody.
Yeah, Rakes has done a great job up in Flin Flon. They're an outstanding team, but if anybody's going to win the league, they're going to have to go through Flin Flon at some point. So it's nice not to get him in the first round, but at some point, if you want to get where you want to go, you're going to have to go through him. And we're just preparing every day like we want to be the best team. We want to win a championship. And if that time comes that we face them, we'll be ready and we'll be prepared. I know that.
One of the things the league loves to talk about, and I'm assuming you guys do in Melville as well, is the number of players that move on to NCAA rides or U Sports or wherever. Have you got a bunch of kids on your team this year that are moving up next year?
Well, all our 20-year-olds will move on, and they all have opportunities right now. We don't have one that's committed. I think they want to weigh their options and see where things shake out at the end. And we've had some younger players that have talked to Division I schools that I believe can play that level. It's just we came in, we're kind of an understated team, not a lot of success in the past, and I think our success has caught a lot of people off guard. And, you know, players are kind of the same way, maybe a little underrated to start with, and now they're starting to open their eyes. So we're getting the recognition, the players are getting seen, but no teams have popped and offered them anything. But I know that there's a lot of good Division I prospects in this organization that will have their time soon enough.
Our guest on the Western Pizza Hotline is Melville Millionaires head coach GM Doug Johnson. Doug, one thing that's really, really cool, at least from my perspective, about your franchise that you're coaching, the Millionaires, is the history. And I think that's cool about a lot of the teams in the SJ. This organization's over 100 years old. There have been some great NHL alumni, one that jumps in my head, Ron Hextall, and there's a few others. That's pretty special, isn't it? When you walk in the building, you see the logo, the jerseys, and that you get to be part of that. We sometimes over-dramatize a team's alumni, but I don't think that's the case with the Melville Millionaires. That's a pretty iconic brand in the hockey world, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and hopefully some of these players can add to it. But Brian Propp, Chris Kunitz, like you mentioned, Ron Hextall, Blaine Locker, there's, you know, those are just guys right off the top of my head. If I'm not mistaken, Damon Severson played a couple games here, a local kid, back in the day as well. So there's a huge alumni with the Millionaires. There's a lot of history, and I'm still learning it, having this be my first year. The crazy thing is the Millionaires have never won an SJHL championship, so that's going to be our goal moving forward, to make sure we're the first staff, the first team to do that in the history. And if it's not this year, hopefully it will be sooner rather than later.
For folks who don't know, and as you mentioned, you're in your first year, but how long did it take you to sort of get an appreciation, or maybe it didn't take long at all, for the intensity of the rivalry with your closest geographic rival in Yorkton? How intense do those Terriers and Mills games get?
Well, they're intense, and it, you know, being in the SJHL as long as I have, you knew the rivalries. Estevan Weyburn, obviously I was Nipawin Melfort for many years. You knew the rivalries, you knew how it played out. So it's something I was expecting, something I was embracing. And the guys are looking forward because we get the home and home to end the season here this Friday, Saturday. So it's going to be one last opportunity for both fan bases to show their dislike to the other group. And it's something that I believe the SJHL has the best rivalries in hockey, just with their proximity to each other and the way they're built up. The league does a good job making sure there's no home and home weekends, rivalry weekends. And it's great for the community. It's great for the bank account and just great for hockey in general.
And as you just said, bank account certainly a focus with the Terriers lately. It's great news that they're going to be able to go ahead next year. They've raised the money or sold the amount of tickets they need to. I'm imagining from your perspective, and I think you just more or less answered it, you certainly don't want to see them move somewhere else or disappear from the league because it's good for the league.
100%. And if somebody fails, I think everybody fails within the league. Like if a team folds, that means obviously they did something wrong, but the league as a whole did something wrong. The league as a whole is going to be missing an integral piece. And as everybody knows, the climate in junior hockey is changing, not only in Junior A, but Western League too. And people's priorities are changing. There's a lot more Netflix on Friday nights than going out and watching a hockey game. And we just have to make sure that we adapt and build a product that people want to see. Make sure it's an entertainment-based product, not just the hockey. And like anything, it's adapt or die. And some teams are doing a really good job of it. Some teams need some help. And it was very excited that the community in Yorkton rallied around the Terriers and supporting them as well as they do. And Terriers have a rich history in the league as well. And you can't lose that history. You can't lose teams like this. And glad they're going to be going. And just got to make sure that every team within the league is as healthy and solid as we can make it.
Doug, in my field of dreams very early on, I spent three seasons broadcasting with the Estevan Bruins and going around the SJHL and loved every second of it. And then had a brief cup of coffee working in the Ontario Hockey League and do some work in the WHL as well. And the thing that really struck me was how blue collar the SJHL is. And I hear a lot of chatter about, scholarships and where players are going to go. And that's always important. But what I found at the OHL level certainly was most of the athletes were talking about where they were headed next. And there was a lot of talk about draft status and agents and whatnot. When I was in the SJ, a lot of them wanted to go somewhere else, but a lot of them seemed content and understanding that they were going to go do a career in something else. And this was their NHL and they were enjoying the experience. There's something really nice about that at the SJHL level that I'm not sure any other league has. Do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day, and to me, this is as pure hockey as you can get, other than you look at the U7 and the U9 and those little guys going out there. Like, they're just playing hockey for the giggles and just for the pure joy of it. Maybe some are playing for their mom and dad because they want them to play, but at the competitive level, I think Junior A and the SJHL in particular is going to be as pure as it can get, because the egos are at a bare minimum here. They're, the group that I work with every day, they show up with their work boots, their hard hat, their lunch kit, and all they want to do is get better, work and compete, get better and have an opportunity. And, I have a quote, entitled to nothing, grateful for everything. And these guys are grateful for everything. And that's what makes it so special. And I think a league in general is a lot of players are like that. They're grateful. They just want that opportunity to put on the jersey, each game night. And they work hard for that. And yeah, they want their Division I scholarships, but it's team based, team success equals personal success. And I think the coaches deserve a lot of credit for nurturing that and growing that within the teams and within the players.
I think the way you just described it explains why the SJ will be bulletproof against any challenge thrown its way by all this stuff happening with the BCHL and Hockey Canada, et cetera, et cetera. So This has been great, Doug. I appreciate you coming on the show. Good luck these last three games. Tomorrow night against Nipawin. Then you've got that home-and-home with the Terriers before the playoffs. We wish you good success in the playoffs, and we'll be watching with added interest.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Greatly appreciate this.
That is Doug Johnson, the coach and general manager of the Melville Millionaires. Time to break. We'll be back with more of the Sports Cage on the Almighty 620 CKRM.
Our house is your house. Welcome inside the Sports Cage on Saskatchewan Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Brennan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you on the Monday edition of the Sports Cage here on Rider Radio 620 CKRM. Hour three, we will get you all caught up on, well, a wrap on the Brier that finished yesterday. I heard somebody make a comment. It's Devin Peru, I think. Feels like Blue Monday in Saskatchewan.
No, I don't know if it's
I don't know if I'd go that far.
I mean, it was Brad Gushue. Everyone loses to Brad Gushue in the Brier final, at least. There's no shame in that, especially for a team that's only been together a few months.
I was kind of let down when they got the two in the, I think it was the sixth end. Mm-hmm. They were trailing, what was it? It was 5-1, then it was 5-2, lost the hammer, and Sask was piling up all these rocks. And there were two shots that Newfoundland missed back-to-back. And Gushue saying to them, guys, you can't miss like that. And I thought that was the perfect, you know, he wasn't embarrassing anybody. He wasn't calling them out, but he was being direct. Now, he might have been a little more direct if he wasn't wearing a TSN microphone.
I suppose.
But I thought that was a perfect way to do it. And he didn't belabor the point. In the later stages of the end, he wasn't saying, hey, we need to try to do. He said, guys, I think we should just take our medicine here. We'll be lucky if we only give up two. And that really caught my attention. And he made some great shots. And they gave up there too. They very nearly gave up the third. And everybody's feeling good because Sask is now within one. It's a 5-4 score. But he just seemed so in control, and his ability to assess the situation for what it was and not get rattled. You know, he's politely scolding his teammates for the terrible shots that they made, for lack of a better term. They weren't terrible by our standards, but terrible by his standards.
Yep.
And he never got rattled.
I respect that. There's a lot to be said for experience. And I mean, let's face it, the Brad Gushue rink, you're not going to throw much at them that they haven't seen before or haven't encountered in a pressure-packed situation. And that gives them an edge over a lot of teams because, let's face it, you get into the Brier final, all of a sudden, it's like you're trying to climb this mountain. It's Brad Gushue Mountain. Can we knock him off? Will we play the best game of our lives? And not? That gets in a lot of people's heads, I would suspect. Whereas the Gushue rink, they just calmly motor along. Did you know they're going to be the oldest team by a fair bit at the upcoming Worlds? I didn't think they were that old. Most of their guys are in their 40s. I think their youngest guy is 38, and he's going to be far and away older than most of the other guys in the Worlds. They're going young.
Brad Gushue's only a month older than Mike McEwen.
Crazy.
And I was never comfortable with the Magic Mike nickname because there was that movie,
but can't we
come up with something else?
I think we should.
But I suspect that he's in it for the long haul just because the team did so well. He had such a good time. And, you know, if they're scrounging around for sponsorship dollars, my goodness, how can the sponsors not step up to keep this team together? Because this is what they accomplished in year one.
That's right.
Just imagine what happens if they can keep it together for a little while. And after the Brier win, because there was a time change, so the game started a little bit earlier, so there was still a little more time after. So we were on YouTube looking at some of the old matchups because we were trying to learn more about Brad Gushue and his history. And it showed him the year he won the Olympics in 2006 in Torino, Italy, and he was 25 years old. And he just looked different, and Mark Nichols looked so much different, like younger. And that's when you realized that these are not young athletes. These are hardened veterans who have been soldiering to be what they are today on the ice. Another example I can think of is in Wayne Gretzky's, well, his first book, I think, that he wrote after he went to Los Angeles. I'm sure Gretzky's written a few books or had somebody write them for him. He reckoned back to losing their Stanley Cup final in 83 to the Islanders. And it was the Islanders' fourth of their dynasty. And he said, you know, we're all tired and we pick up our gear. We're walking down the hallway and we look into the dressing room and we can see the Islander wives, girlfriends, they're all celebrating, they're having champagne, but the players, they're all sitting there with ice packs and, you know, being treated by this war that they had just been through. Now, I'm not saying that Brad Gushue and his team were sitting around with ice packs last night. The point I'm making is it takes a lifetime and many, many years of perfecting your craft to get to where they're at.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a sign of just how hard it is to get to that mountaintop and to earn that status. And you can see why Brad Gushue wants to cling to it and just wants to keep doing it for many years to come. And he looks great. So I initially thought this was probably the last time we were going to see Gushue at a Brier in Saskatchewan. But he is only 43 at this point.
Certainly not old.
He could. We've seen Brier skips go into their 50s. So if we get the Brier in another 6 years,
maybe.
I think there's a pretty good chance we'll see Brad Gushue again. I hope we'll see Brad Gushue again at a Brier in Regina. I just hope he doesn't win it every year.
I'm sure he's a great guy, but I also hope he loses the rematch if that happens.
You know what? If Saskatchewan wasn't going to win, I would probably want him to win.
Yeah.
If it was going to be one of the common names.
I think he was number two on a lot of people's lists.
But we'll get into that a little bit more later. Coming up, David Benefield. You're listening to the Sports Cage Monday edition on Rider Radio 620 CKRM. And it is your Monday sports ticker for Bronco Plumbing and Heating, where professional service is guaranteed. They'll treat you right. And it is the second day of NFL free agency out there. So a lot of the chatter about Kirk Cousins signing a four-year $180 million contract with the Atlanta Falcons. I guess the Vikings have decided that they're going to roll on defense and be just fine without him. Saquon Barkley moves from the Giants to the Eagles. And those are really the biggest ones. The one I'm most excited about, Gardner Minshew signing with the Las Vegas Raiders.
You're just excited.
With that great mustache.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Rivals the one that you're wearing.
Comparable, today. Really. That's where the similarities end, unfortunately. But yeah, he's a lot of fun to watch.
And of course, the big news with my Denver Broncos, Russell Wilson moving over to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was made official yesterday.
Yeah, but $80 million in cap space remains. Something to remember him by.
That is your Monday sports ticker for Bronco Plumbing and Heating.
We're talking sports on your way home. This is the Sports Cage on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you in hour two of this Monday Sports Cage for Kinexus Arts Center. You can chime in on the discussion calling us toll-free at 1-866-767-0620 or text us on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line 306-936-6262. By the way, don't forget, we are giving away a pair of tickets today to the Regina Spring Home Show happening next weekend, March 22nd to 24th. The keyword today to text in, spring. We'll have an answer for you before our winner before we leave the airwaves today. Our next guest spent two seasons with your Saskatchewan Roughriders and also played three seasons with two different teams for head coach Dave Ritchie, who we sadly lost over the weekend. Coach Ritchie coached the BC Lions in the very memorable 1994 Grey Cup and worked with a few other teams, BC, Montreal, and Winnipeg. So joining us to give his thoughts and impressions of the man is our good pal David Benefield, joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. David, are you in BC? Is that where you are today?
No, maybe in spirit, but no, I'm in SoCal today.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Although we're having a pretty good day. The snow's melting around here. We feel like we're kind of cheating everybody who went south with all the good weather that we're having. I looked it up. I see that you played for Coach Ritchie, not in that 94 season, but his last year with the BC Lions, and you did 2 years with him in Winnipeg. What is your fondest memory of Dave Ritchie?
You know, Dave was just the sort of guy, he was right out of casting. He would have been great in like as one of like the commandos in any war movie, or the big boss getting his guys ready to go do something. I mean, he was comical, but he was exacting. Like, he knew exactly where he wanted his blitzes to hit. He knew where the openings would be. I mean, he would call us out and laugh about it and then go about his business like it was nothing. I mean, but he was always into his guys. I mean, he just he thought the world of his guys. If anything bad happened, if he thought it was a cheap shot or the refs were watching things and not making calls because his defense, it was always his defense. If anything, if he didn't like it, he would go nuts. I mean, he could rally the troops like no one's business. I was spoiled. I was definitely spoiled because I had him as a rookie after Edmonton. And after that, I was like, he had James West, Greg Battle, Randolph, Payton. I mean, he had defenses. So it's like, you're playing for this guy. You're looking at his playbook. You're going, oh, my God. And he was, it was just like, you couldn't imagine playing for anyone else. I think he was by far head and shoulders between, yeah, there was just nobody else, you know, until like much, much later, I think Don Lindsay, but Dave Ritchie was the dude. Just the dude.
You played for him in Ottawa, didn't you? I never thought about that, but he would have been your coordinator, wouldn't he, with the Ottawa Rough Riders?
Yeah, he was. I mean, and that was Animal House. I mean, really, that was Animal House. We had just characters running around, and you know, like I think I said, Ottawa was the roughest place in the world to play. I remember guys would get excited to say, oh, we're going to Ottawa because, you know, the ratio of chicks to dudes was like phenomenal. It was like 7-1 at the time. And it was just like, you know, guys were like, oh my God, here we go. It's just like, what's this Ottawa you speak of? And then next thing you know, I'm there. And it was just, he let guys go. I mean, he had guys like Barry Wilburn.
Oh yeah.
And Barry was a character, but he was a shutdown DB. I mean, the guy was a baller in the NFL. I think he was an MVP of a Super Bowl, and crazy as all outdoors. James Jefferson, who, I mean, he went to the stands in Regina.
I remember that, Spider Tomlinson. Said,
somebody,
yeah.
Somebody said the wrong thing and to the wrong guy, and he went after him. I mean, oh, my God. It was just like, but Dave was just like, come here. Let's talk about it. I'll get over. Okay, let's go. Let's go kill somebody. You know what I mean? It was like just like that.
He was maybe the best coach who could corral those personalities and put together a group of lunatics and make it all work. That was kind of his trademark, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I heard that he coached Greg Battle and James West and Randolph, I was like, I mean, I didn't even know them. But I saw the film of them, and I was like, I want to play for him. I'm all in. Because, I mean, I was like 220, 225, barely. And it was just like, oh, I get to run around and be a linebacker like, you know, like I was in college. It's like, and come off the edge? Oh, this will be too great. It's just like, you had to. You just, and then he let you just do what you did. I mean, it's just kind of like, I could hang out with this guy for a while.
Guys, I always thought if George Pappard wasn't available, Dave Ritchie would have been ideal as Hannibal in the A-Team TV series back in the day. He was perfect for that role.
Right?
Tough when he needed to be, but also had your back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was Dave. That was definitely Dave, for sure.
You mentioned some of the characters on those teams. Is that what the CFL's missing now? Everything seems so vanilla in terms of personalities. Everyone's afraid of ending up on social media saying the wrong thing.
Oh, yeah, and I don't, I mean, he would have us mix it up. I know I got in a fight. My first game, it was against Ken Austin in Ottawa, Regina, Rough Riders in town, and I got in a fight with one of our linemen because one of our vets got in a fight, and we were always taught, you know, hey, you back up your vets, you back up your team. That was like a Dave Ritchie way, and I jumped in, got a shiner, like taking on this big old offensive lineman, and he goes, he looks at me, sees my picture in the paper. He goes, well, at least now you're not such a pretty boy. and that was the end of it. Like, and you know, it made me like, I was like, really? I'm a pretty boy? Well, far out. Thanks, coach. And I went out there and had a game of my life, but it was like, but that was Dave though. And he was always just so, he was so low key about how he praised you, but you knew it was always good and always really good. He was just like, he was kind of like the grumpy uncle that loves you to death and lets you do a lot of things, but just don't do the wrong thing. You know what I mean? He was always, he was that guy.
Among the million things that you currently have on your plate, at least according to Wikipedia, you got about a million. One of the ones I'm thinking, top of your list, is football dad. Tell us about this Ty Benefield kid.
Oh, my gosh. He's just really, dude, in the middle of COVID, he said, I want the smoke. We're at Vancouver College, and he said, I'm out of here. I want to go. And he was set to be the starting quarterback. He would have been amazing. And he was just like, I want to go. He goes to the Trinity League, which is probably the best league in the country, arguably. You know, Bryce Young, most NFL quarterbacks probably played from California in the Trinity League. I mean, we route people normally across the country at some really scary schools. And then Ty shows up, makes great catches, plays receiver instead. And then all of a sudden, spring, he says, I want to play safety. Next thing you know, scouts are looking at him because they're there in the spring just watching him. And then he wants to leave to play with his buddy because he, you know, always into friends, his friends. He leaves with his friends and has a monster year, goes to Boise and kills it. And everyone's like, we're all sitting there like, wow, he just made it look really easy. And that's what all the coaches are like. And then some of the personnel guys, he says to me, he says, Dad, it's weird. We have NFL people on the sideline looking at us during warmups. I'm like, that is different, isn't it? You know, and he's just like, he's a matter of fact about it. And so that's one of the hats I wear now. And then my daughter just came back from Philly. And so I'm a volleyball dad, too. And I guess she was one of the MVPs of the weekend.
You're a volleyball dad, just like Brett Favre, except without all that controversy and stuff.
Yeah. I'm not buying libraries, you know. I haven't got my check from Randy yet for our pensions yet, so I can go out and buy a library or a wing of a library or buy a gym. So it won't be happening anytime soon. But, yeah, but it's crazy. I mean, and football, as you guys know, it's just nuts because, you know, everything is just so hectic in the NCAA right now. And I got these, you know, I'm coaching three kids that have, they probably had about 180 offers between the three of them. Carter Jones, he's going to Cal. He's a linebacker. Tyler Parker, who's on everybody's list. He just got back this weekend from Florida and Alabama. And Anthony Jones, who is he's that new 6'5", D-end. You know, he's going to be a junior next year. And I heard Bama was interested in him last year. He's got a bunch of people. And then, you know, we got this quarterback kid, Caden Jones, who's going to be something special too. So it's just nuts trying to keep your calendar and figure out where all these kids are going to be every weekend and seeing these different places and the football that we're seeing. It's just, I just shake my head going, man, I thought it was one thing being in BC, but now being down here, I thought I was really on top of it, but now it's just like, oh my God, so much has changed here. So much has changed in the landscape of football.
Well, if that kid of yours qualifies as a Canadian, and I'm sure he will, they always look for any reason to qualify somebody as a Canadian, and he decides to go pro. He could be worth a lot of money in the Canadian football.
Well, he is a Canadian because he was born in Vancouver.
Well, there you
go. I missed the Banjo Bowl to watch him being born, so I would imagine he is Canadian.
He better qualify if you missed the Banjo Bowl for him to be born.
And he spent all but 2 years in our schools there. So it's like, you know, yeah, he's Canadian. Both of them are. So yeah, it's definitely been a different time for sure. But how are you guys doing up there? What's going on? Corey Mace, you know, the last time I saw Corey, he was a big kid, right? I think he was on the field in Burnaby. And he may have even had like a popsicle. He was like eating. And he was like just this big, quiet looking kid. And I'm watching him walk and I'm like, kid, where are you going? And he goes, Wyoming. And I was like, okay. And then he wanders off. I'm like, big old kid. And I just shook my head. Wow, he's a big kid. And then that was it. And now look at him. He's like the head coach there. It's crazy.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people around the country who give us a different perspective than those of us who live in the 306, who have rose-colored or green and white-colored glasses. And sometimes when we think that the organization's on the right track, the outsiders say, I'm not so sure about that. Doesn't seem like that's an issue this time around. It seems like he's getting this hire is getting rave reviews. What do you think as an outsider?
You know, number one, coaching tree, that matters. Who you've been coached by all those years. I mean, I don't know, you know, the guys in Wyoming, but I know the guys, you know, the guys he's had up in the CFL. I think the Calgary group of coaches, Huffnagel and those guys, that's a great tree to learn from. Dave Dickinson, great tree to learn from. So the way I see it, and with his energy and knowledge of the game, plug the right people in, you guys can get back to winning again, you know, big time. You know, you've already done all the right things. I mean, you've got the right, you always have to have a GM. You got to have a head coach. You got to have great fans. And you guys have the bonus. So you got the, like, probably the best stadium in the country, in the freaking country.
Easily.
So, hands down. And, I mean, it's perfect. It is perfect. So it's like, why bother worrying about anything else other than who you're bringing in? And then if we, the league, could figure out how to promote guys properly, you know, across the league, so that, you know, somebody in Ottawa wants to go watch you guys play, not because it's the Rough Riders, but because this guy is special that plays for the Rough Riders. Now all of a sudden you've got viewers. If we could get some people to figure out U Sport and promote those guys a hell of a lot better, mm-hmm. You know, man, we could actually fix this thing once and for all.
Superstars is what you're talking about. We need marketable superstars. Well, listen, they can't figure it out at the league office level, but you, me, and Pete and Colson over a few cold ones, I'm sure, could figure it out in one afternoon. I wanted to ask you, do you remember hosting a little radio show with Scott Schultz for this very radio station when you were playing with the Rough Riders at the end of your career?
I think that was a good time, and that was so long ago. Hopefully Scotty's doing well.
Saw him at Cabela's the other day. He looks the same. I don't think he's changed. You could hear him a mile away.
As long as he's not walking around Cabela's like, with his jock strap on, saying "Play me in ping pong," he used to walk around the locker room. Let's play ping pong, Bissell. Oh my God! Jeez. Bald head and jock strap. He just jumped out of the sauna trying to lose a couple pounds. He was just comedy. But no, but you know what? You guys do need. I don't know how it works now, but it's just like I think you guys sweat it way too much in calling people superstars because you want them to be like, I don't know, you want them to be a certain way and look a certain way and do certain things. And I hate to tell you guys, all you guys up there, it's not that way. Ballers are ballers. People with charisma and ballers are automatically at the front of the line, and that's it. And you just let them do their thing. But I think the CFL, you guys just want it, you want to make it too, not organic, but you want to try to create it, and often that fails because they're stilted. They're not real.
We need more ballers in the CFL. Is that what you're saying?
You need more ballers with charisma. You need to let them do what they do and stop trying to handle them or overhandle them or wait until like 3 years goes by before all of a sudden now they're ready to go. And you're like, it's like, no, you can tell. As I was telling this guy down here, I said, I can always tell you who the players are, like, from day one. You can spot them a mile away.
Interesting. More ballers in the CFL. You know,
for sure. Personalities, please.
Yes, no doubt. Hey, no, Benny, this has been great. We don't do this nearly enough. And one of these days, we're going to get you and Schultzy together. And I don't know how we're going to do it, but we'll figure it out. And we will get you back on these airwaves in some fashion or another.
Well, thank you. Thanks for reaching out. It's always good to hear from guys from back. I call it back at home because it's so odd being here. It's like, oh my goodness, where am I? You know, it's just so different. So thanks for reaching out, Brendan, and you guys take it easy. All right. And tell your PA to get his, to adjust his like personality. God, he was so dead.
Okay. I will do that. All right.
Good God.
Benny's on a roll.
He's that not is wrong.
David Benefield joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. We will step aside and react to all of that when we come back. You're listening to the Sports Cage on Rider Radio, 620 CKRM.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Sports Cage. Now back to the action on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Monday's Sports Cage for Kinexus Arts Center. Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco on this Monday edition of the show. We will check in with Taylor Shire from the Regina Leader Post, who spent a copious amount of hours down at the Brandt Center during the now over Montana's Brier. What did you think of that chat with our old pal David Benefield?
I want to know, and I think we need to do it. How are we going to turn the popsicle thing into a new nickname for Corey Mace? Because that was freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, just some big kid, probably eating, had a popsicle.
Seems like all these ex-riders have these stories of Corey Mace as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, like Brooks Finley.
Mm-hmm.
There's the story of how Brooks gave him a ticket to come watch the BC Lions, and nice. The rest is history.
Nice.
It's just the little things, right, that turn out to be big.
So many of those in the CFL, and that's what makes it awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm totally with Benny on this whole ballers thing. I think we have good players up here. We miss the big personalities. You know what? It was a really Bush League era in the early 90s.
I'll put it this way. Nick Marshall's a baller.
And we don't need more Nick Marshalls. He was a pretty good talent.
Yeah.
That's part of the hard part, isn't
it? Seems tackling.
Like, well, it seems like the superstar talent that gets bypassed by the NFL that comes up here are guys who have a troubled past.
Yeah.
Right? Chad Kelly had a troubled past.
Yep.
He ended up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Marshall had issues. He ended up in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Ricky Williams. Probably even though, the poster child for that.
Even though looking back on it, his issues weren't really issues. He just liked to smoke pot. I don't think anybody would care about that today.
No. Nobody bat right an eye now.
People would be questioning if he was a running back and he didn't smoke pot.
I suppose.
So the challenge for the Canadian Football League is to try to alter the rules and the system to a point that we get players who can be superstars in our league, but maybe don't quite fit mm-hmm. down in the NFL.
Yep.
That's hard. That's getting harder and harder to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, the NFL is desperate for bodies in some positions. I mean, backup quarterbacks, what have you got? You've got 40-year-old guys who've never done anything in the league, but they've still got a job because who else you got?
And you can pay a backup better down there than you can a starter up here, especially that's before the dollar exchange. I feel like if we could get to a point where backup quarterbacks are paid even on par with what they are in the NFL, I think that would make a big difference because there would be a lot of guys down there who actually do want to play. It's not just about the money.
Yep.
Sean Salisbury was a star quarterback at USC, mm-hmm. and he was very capable backup. He left the Indianapolis Colts to come to Winnipeg. He said, I just felt like I was getting stale.
Hmm.
And he wasn't very good in the CFL, but he did win a Grey Cup.
True.
He was good enough to help Winnipeg win a Grey Cup, largely because of their defense. Hmm. But I think that's what we're missing out on right now. I feel like if we could offer comparable dollars for backup quarterbacks in the NFL, I think you'd see some of those guys choose to come to Canada if they're guaranteed, you know, a starting job or more playing time. That's a big reason why Warren Moon signed in Edmonton.
Yeah.
And that was before the NFL draft. Big reason why he was never drafted.
That's how we got George Reed. The money was not comparable. The money was better up here and he had opportunities.
So how do we create those opportunities for star players that the NFL wants? And I think it's by, when you think outside the box, I think it's by changing the rules a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do that. I haven't figured that out.
I don't.
But
that's why Randy gets the big bucks.
Or dig into, do a better job of tapping into youth sport and finding a pipeline there that the NFL just isn't all that interested in. Coming up in hour three of the show, we will talk Brier. You are listening to the Monday Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Monday Sports Cage coming at you for Kinexus Arts Center. Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you on this edition of the program. Still ahead, we'll check in with Taylor Shire from the Regina Leader Post, who's the intrepid reporter who's been following all the curling. He's watched a lot of curling over the last month or so.
Probably the most he ever has.
I was texting today with Russ Howard. Look at me dropping names.
Ooh. And
he's on an airplane heading to Sydney, Nova Scotia for the Women Worlds. He's helping Team Japan.
Japan.
You know, I think, I don't want to say that curling's not a mainstream sport. In Canada, it very much is.
True.
But it was kind of like in hour one when we were talking with John Podbelski about track and field stars, how they're not the greatest paid. I almost think sometimes if you're going to be an athlete, pick a sport that not everybody else is thinking about. You know, like if you're going to make it as a hockey player, you really got to knuckle down.
Yep.
If you're going to make it as a football player, you really got to sell out. You want to make it as a curler? Yeah, you got to sell out there too, but you can have like a day job. Most of them do. I hope
got
that
a great story about that.
Well, if one of my kids is going to be an elite athlete, I think if I want them to be an elite athlete, I don't care if they're elite athletes or not, I would encourage them to get after it in badminton.
Yes.
It's a cool sport.
Yes.
You can go to the Olympics playing badminton.
Tried to get my kid into lawn bowling. I mean, he did all the quote unquote normal sports. This is not to disparage the sport of lawn bowling by any means, but talking to the lawn bowlers, it's like, you know, if you're pretty good, you can see the whole world for free and go to some really cool places and, you know, do lawn bowling in the winter when it's summer somewhere else.
You'll never get paid big dollars lawn bowling.
Nope.
But you'll never have to train the copious amount of hours that the more high profile sport athletes will either.
I think
so. There's your wisdom
it's worth a shot.
Monday afternoon. Right now, we'll go out on the Western Pizza Hotline. We're very pleased to be joined by, I was going to say ink-stained wretch, but you can't call writers that anymore because it's all online.
Yep.
Maybe, I don't know, we'll have to come up with something
else. No, nobody has those either.
Taylor Shire from the Regina Leader Post joins us. Taylor, have you watched more curling in the last 6 months than any other point in your life?
Yes, that would be affirmative on that. Yeah, no doubt. All the way from the Scotties to basically every draw here at the Brier, every game within every draw at the Brier lately. It's been a lot of curling, but can't complain about that.
We all had fun at the Brier this week, and there was some whining about little hiccups that we had, like the leaky roof. We had the pipe bursting in Brad Gushue's locker room. It's all fun and games. Nobody got hurt. There seemed to be a lot of chatter about the ice when the arena filled up. I heard Russ Howard mention on the broadcast when shooters were lining up to take shots. Well, I don't know if you want to try that shot. Pretty frosty over there. Was that evident inside the building where you were?
It's hard for me to comment on the ice because I didn't play on it. I didn't throw a rock on it. But what I heard from the curlers after each draw was that the ice was different from game to game, day to day. And that was a thing that they had to adjust to. Everybody plays in the same sheet. Everybody has to adjust to the conditions. So I don't think it was consistent throughout the week. Whether it was good, bad, is one thing, but I just don't think it was consistent. And that even led to Saskatchewan's first loss against Nova Scotia earlier. Mike McEwen and company said right after the game, they're like, we weren't expecting this ice, or we couldn't get our rocks to do what we wanted them to do, and Nova Scotia, who played earlier in the day on that ice, was already adjusted to it. So that led to the first loss, and then even McEwen said last night against Gushue after the loss, he said, you know, the ice conditions were a little bit different than what they were when they beat Botcher in the afternoon semifinal. So it can change day to day. It can change, you know, hour to hour. And I know they work hard, and I'm not going to criticize the ice conditions, but from what I heard from the curlers, they were just different game to game, which obviously makes things challenging.
Speaking of last night, Taylor, for those of us watching on TV, we got a rough feel for what the atmosphere was like inside the Brandt Center. But what about for those in there? I imagine the atmosphere was pretty electric, especially when Team Sask closed to 5-4.
Yeah, it was good. It sort of had shades of the Memorial Cup or even the Pats run in the WHL finals the year prior, just to sort of feel that building as electric as it was. I will say the final was something, and then right before the final was certainly something, but the semifinal game against Botcher, that's probably the loudest I've heard that place in quite some time, when McEwen made that shot in the third end for 3 points. The building erupted, and I think that was the loudest ovation of the week, including the final. It was just a tremendous atmosphere in the semifinal, and obviously it carried through to the final, the pregame. I imagine a lot of people went to the patch between games, and then the pregame, it was just sort of, you could feel that buzz right before, when the Curlers were practicing, right before the first rocks were thrown. So, yeah, it was a pretty incredible atmosphere, and I was lucky to have a good seat at.
Buzz might have been the optimal word in that situation as well. Now, obviously, Team McEwen was the fan favorite, and by and large, why wouldn't they be? But would it be safe to say, and we discussed this early in the show, that Team Gushue was number two in a lot of people's hearts?
Yeah, 100%. I would say he would have garnered, you know, most of the attention, and probably the second biggest applauses throughout the week when he was introduced to Mike McEwen. I think because of the way Mike McEwen played, not just because he was representing Saskatchewan, but how he played, he just, you know, garnered that much more appreciation from the hometown crowd. He was an All-Star skip, so I really feel like, you know, those two things together, the way he played and obviously representing Saskatchewan, really made him the fan favorite, and Gushue was not too far behind him. Obviously, he's loved by curlers everywhere, including here in Saskatchewan, for what he's done over the last decade.
Could you envision a scenario where this team of Mike McEwen and Colton Flash and the brothers could possibly not be together next year? I mean, it just looked like they had the time of their lives. They curled really, really well together, and I just have to think that there's going to be a lot of motivation, desire to stay together and see where this thing goes.
Yeah, and I should clarify my last answer. Gushue has been good for, what, 2 decades now? So I don't want to take away from what he's, you know, what he did in 2006.
And, yeah, don't cheat him out of decade.
So I can't say decade now anymore. I got to say 20 years. But yeah, speaking with Flash, McEwen and the Marsh brothers after the game, they had full intentions of bringing this team back together next year, wanting to come back. I feel like they did obviously take a massive step forward this year, and I think that's just going to only give them momentum. So this was the plan. It wasn't a one-year plan all along. It was sort of a, you know, let's build up to the next Olympic cycle, and there's obviously going to be Briars in there. So they have the Olympic trials next year. They're going to try. That's kind of their next main goal, I would say, is get a spot in the Olympic trials to be able to have a chance to represent Team Canada at the Games. And then obviously, you know, the Briars and the Tankards will come with that. So I don't think we've seen the last of Team McEwen in Saskatchewan. I think they're going to stick around for at least the next few years and maybe beyond. But you never know. This could be the next great team if they keep doing what they showed they could do on the weekend.
Did you get a chance to talk to any of the organizers, Curling Canada or otherwise, in terms of how they're feeling about the way things went? I mean, other than the hiccups, which I don't think anyone at their end had any control over, I'm assuming they're pretty pleased with 101,000 people showing up.
Yeah, overall, I think it was viewed as a success, obviously. And, I'm going to say it was sort of a dream scenario for who ended up in the final for them. If you would have asked, you know, organizers at the start of the week, what would be the best matchup? I would say it would be host Saskatchewan versus two-time defending champ Canada. So it really played out to be like that. Just over 100,000 fans in the building through the 10 days. I believe it was lower than the amount of fans that came through the doors in 2018, and then even lower than 2006, the last two times Regina hosted. So, but, you know, that can be, you know, people talk about a trend in attending sporting events or whatnot. So, overall, I would say organizers, I didn't talk to them specifically, but, you know, everybody around the building and everybody who put on the event did a great job, and I think they should be proud of it because it was a great event.
I thought the games were pretty good, too. I've heard some complaining at times that men's curling is sometimes not as interesting as women's curling. You seem to have more blank ends and teams just trying to blast those stones out of there. And yeah, we saw our share of blank ends in the games that I watched anyway, but the teams that were sitting back and that were playing that way eventually it kind of blew up in their face because they would blank, and then they'd give up a steal and then another steal. I thought by and large the entertainment value was pretty good for any curling event that you're going to see. What did you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And anytime you have the big names and those players who are capable of making those shots, even when you go back to the Scotties, right? Like, you know, dream matchups when you have Holman and Jones facing off in the final and even, you know, the night before and you know, all the big names at the Brier, you know, Gushue, Botcher, you know, McEwen in there as well. I think that's, you know, when you go to an event or when you're watching an event, you want to see the best of the best. You want to see, you know, the best that this country has to offer compete in whatever sport it is. And I think that's exactly what we got. So, yeah, dollar value, it's hard to beat for something like that when you see, you know, Brad Gushue very well could go down as the best curler of all time. I would say he already is in our generation. That wasn't around for the Ernie Richardson era, so I can't quite comment on that. Ernie's certainly done a lot, and he's kind of curling royalty, not only in Saskatchewan, but in Canada. But, yeah, to be able to see one of the greatest curlers of all time, you know, right in our backyard is a pretty good bang for your buck, I would say.
I couldn't believe what I read and then what I heard today driving in. Members of the Gushue rink talking about, well, yeah, we're going to go to Worlds and we're going to do our best. And then after that, don't know how much longer we're going to be doing this. I mean, these dudes are on top of their game. They're on top of their sport. And they're only in their 40s. And I think their youngest members in their late 30s. So is retirement preposterous or is that a viable possibility?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. And I didn't talk to the Gushue squad about retiring right after they won the championship, so I can't comment on that.
That would seem inappropriate.
Yeah, not specifically. But I would say, you know, this... I can't say I can guarantee this team will be back because we've seen over the last number of years with all the curling import rules and you know, people changing teams. Like, even Gushue brought in Harden 2 years ago, so even... You know, through his last 8 years, I believe he's won 6 Briers or how many ever Briers, and even they made a change to the team. So I would say Brad will continue to curl, and you know, he's been with Mark Nichols and his lead Jeff Walker for quite some time. So I would say those guys will stick together for as long as they still have the drive. I imagine they have other things they want to accomplish in life. So. I don't know. I have no idea how long Gushue and company will be around, but we're going to enjoy them while they're still at the top of the game.
Kind of our Michael Jordan, I guess, for curling, for lack of a better term. And when you have greatness, sometimes you get sick and tired of them winning all the time. But then when they're gone, you miss having them around. So I guess that's kind of the gist of it. Enjoy him while he's here. And that's why I hope as many people as possible had the chance to see him in Regina this weekend, because I don't know that he's going to be back at a Brier in Regina. We will see. Mm-hmm. Taylor Shire, great job as always. Thank you for this.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys.
And that is Taylor Shire from the Regina Leader Post. You can read his stuff at leaderpost.com or do what I did and just download the app and read his stuff there. We will take a short time out and be back with more. You're listening to the Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
The Kings of Saskatchewan Sports Talk. This is the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you on the Monday edition of the Sports Cage on this Blue Monday after the Brier loss.
I'm already over it.
Was there a team that you were cheering against? Be honest, in the whole tournament.
Yeah.
Care to share it with us?
Their skip's name rhymes with Motcher.
Yeah. With Mosh? Is that what you said?
No. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Brendan Botcher whole thing.
I don't know.
And, of course, apologies to Ben Hebert, who, of course, is from Regina and plays for that rink and is an all-around good guy. But
probably the best lead in the country.
I would think one of the best,
yeah.
But just, I don't know, something about that skip just rubs me the wrong way.
Is it the defensive style that he has been accused?
That, yes.
Is it the way his team seemed to get blown up right after winning the last, or their one Brier victory?
Mm-hmm. Just seems like he'd be a tough guy to play with or for. I don't know. I'm not privy to any inside information or discussions, but yeah, he just seems a little prickly.
That's a fair observation, and that is not the first time that I have heard that. It's really interesting how it seems like year after year when he goes to these events, they're always right there at the end.
Yep.
But they seem to have trouble in big games. You notice that? Yes. And we see that in other sports. And I almost wonder if maybe there's just, I think he's an engineer by trade. And I see this in other sports. So this is the reference that I'm pulling it from.
Okay.
I see coaches all the time come up with systems, especially in hockey and basketball. And that system will get you far in the regular season. You will overachieve. You'll get to the playoffs. And then you'll make it all the way to the semifinals or the finals. And then you just don't have what is necessary to ratchet it up another gear when you have to in the championship game. You have to treat championship games differently. We all know you treat the playoffs differently than the regular season in hockey.
True.
And I think there's a little more emotion. There's a little more spirit. There's a little more feel for the situation and less analytics involved. Is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely.
And when I watch his teams play, and it was with the other group he had before, as well as the group he has now, they seem like a very well-oiled machine that is technically drawn up to win, but they don't seem to have the moxie and the spirit when it's time to get over the hump in the playoffs, if that makes any sense at all.
I think so. It's almost like the robotic
robotic. That's the word I was looking for, Pete.
Well, you're welcome. Or so businesslike that they forget that they're out there having fun playing a game.
Right, right. And hockey was really bad for this for a really, really long time.
Oh, the neutral zone trap.
I heard Lanny McDonald talk about that ad nauseum, how he said the athletes they don't look like they're having fun.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, if you're not, well, okay, the paychecks aren't bad, but still, it's a kid's game. You grew up playing it. You grew up loving it. You weren't getting paid when you were a kid. Try to remember that sometime.
And you can't succeed if you're not having fun, truly, or at least play to the best of your ability. And it just seems like something maybe stresses them out. I don't know, but it just seems like they're a little too business and not enough excitement.
Maybe when you're so focused on your goals and doing it a certain way, you can't adapt when things go off the rails a little bit. It's much harder to adapt.
They seem to get rattled.
Yeah, I think
so. A little more easily when things don't go to script.
Yes.
I think that's very well put.
And they're from Alberta, so there.
There's that.
Yeah.
Still have a pair of tickets to give away to the Regina Spring Home Show. Text the keyword SPRING to 306-936-6262. I'll read that again. 306-936-6262. We have some texts that we will get to when we come back. You are listening to Hour 3 of the Monday Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM. And it is time for your Monday sports ticker for Busy Bee Overhead Doors. Busy Bee will repair or replace your residential or commercial garage door so you don't get stuck in or out. Catch the buzz. Busy Bee Doors, the garage door specialists. Well, we all went through Trade Center late last week, and I know on the TV behind us, we could see the Winnipeg Jets are getting set to face the Washington Capitals tonight in the first matchup with Tyler Toffoli as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. Are you all swept up in Jet fever, Pete?
Not even a little.
I don't think anybody here is. They've never really been able to harness this as their territory. I don't know.
Maybe I think everyone here established you're either a Leafs fan or a Habs fan or an Oilers fan or a Flames fan many years ago. And when the Jets came back, there was just no room. Unless you're Rob Van Stone.
If they hadn't disappeared for a while, maybe even then, I don't know. That there's a thing with Winnipeg. But anywho, the big news of the day from NFL free agency. This is day number two. The Atlanta Falcons have signed Kirk Cousins to a four-year, $180 million deal. I don't even want to get into the numbers. They're all overpaid bums. And Saquon Barkley, the very talented running back of the New York Giants, is switching over to the Philadelphia Eagles. Probably better for him. And that is your Monday sports ticker for Busy Bee Overhead Doors.
You're listening to the radio home of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Brendan McGuire, Pete Pascoe, and Colson Schultz on this Monday edition of the program. And lots of Briar talk that we had earlier today. out on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line. This from Leonard. I was watching the curling. Is it true if you don't finish first, then you are last, according to Ricky Bobby? You've heard that one?
Yes, I've heard that one. So, Leonard's not a big fan of moral victories. I get that. That's fine. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, strictly from a statistical and who gets the money or who gets the lion's share of the money standpoint, yeah, first place is the only one that matters. But I think in this case, a lot of people around here are probably okay with second place for the McEwen team this year.
It won't be that way next year.
No, expectations will be considerably higher, as they should be. I mean, that team played great. Eventually, they're going to figure out how to beat Gushu, or someone's going to, and that should open things up.
They figured out how to beat Gushu during the week, so let's not forget. They did show, and they did have that big end where they were very dangerously close to tying or maybe even taking the lead.
Yep.
In that one end that was completely disastrous. I can't remember if it was a fifth or sixth end, but it was shaping up to be an absolute disaster for the Gushu rink, and they didn't have Hammer. You know what I really liked about it was the team, you know, I've always heard that having Hammer is just so important.
Right.
Right? You hear that all the time.
Yeah.
That you'd rather blank. Some teams would, you know, unless they score two at the very minimum, they don't want to give up that Hammer. I think we're learning that that might change because there were a lot of steals.
Yes,
a lot of teams that lost games on steals. In that game, it seemed like the team that didn't have Hammer controlled a lot of the ends, especially through the middle of that game. And that's a good thing because it lends itself to unpredictability in the sport.
Was it the McEwen rink? It was one of the rinks at the Briar anyway. Stole a single five ends in a row in one of their games. Like that's incredible. So, yeah, open things up a little.
You never used to see that. Or even that one game in the round robin that Botcher lost.
Mm-hmm.
When they had the 5-3 lead against Northern Ontario, gave up one, because Northern Ontario had the Hammer. Mm-hmm. So you would have thought they'll have the Hammer these last two ends. They should be able to control it from here on out. And it didn't happen that way. They gave up a steal and then a steal, and they blew it. So
that's got to sting an awful lot. But it also makes the sport a little more interesting. Otherwise, if games are over after six ends, that's kind of dull.
It proves that the five-rock rule is working.
Yeah.
That's what that tells me.
I think so.
Another text from the Capital Ford Lincoln text line from Lynette in Regina. Really enjoyed hearing David Benefield again on the show this afternoon. His football memories and opinions are great. And we do have ballers and personalities on our green team. AJ Ouellette will add to the gang. That is from Lynette.
Couldn't agree more, Lynette. AJ Ouellette just participated in a professional wrestling match. I'm sure you can find the highlights on YouTube or X right now. He's such a personality. I hope he, knock on wood, I hope he stays healthy.
You're worried about that.
Well, he plays a very physical style. He brings it, in other words, and that can put some wear and tear on a body. However, he hadn't been a starting quarterback until like the last starting running back, pardon me, in this league until the last couple of years. So he doesn't have maybe as many miles on his running back body as other guys his age would.
Yeah, there should be a lot more tread left on the tire, I would think. And even in that Grey Cup year that the Argos won here in Regina, a lot of people didn't even know really who he was until they won that Grey Cup game. And a lot of even football reporters thought he was a Canadian just because of his name, and he's not.
No.
If they had done it properly, apparently he does have relatives who are Canadian, and I suspect they could have qualified him, and the CFL Players Association told him the same thing, but apparently there's a rule that once you play one game as an American, that's it. You're cut off. Like, they will not consider your status about being a Canadian.
We have very strange eligibility rules.
We do.
Very strange.
Very subjective, yeah. Well, I guess the fact that they draw a line.
Do you like poutine? No. Oh, sorry. You're an import.
Well, it is. I'm glad that they're at least designating the Canadians because what's-his-face, the Brett Rypien, the guy who played in the NFL with Denver.
Yep.
And he's played a little bit with the Rams. I think he's with the Jets right now. Apparently, he scrambled, and his agent made a point of checking in with the league office to confirm his Canadian eligibility up here. He wouldn't do that if he wasn't interested and he wasn't considering Canada as an option.
Again, as you mentioned right near the start of the show, some guys just want to play and they get to a point where they've been a backup in the NFL for 3, 4, 5 years. They just want to get some playing time. And maybe it's also a case of leveraging that playing time to get back into a better position in the NFL, which is fair. But if it gets good players up here, I'm all for it.
What's that show that does errors and omissions? Is it Pardon the Interruption?
Oh,
I don't know.
Okay, yep.
One of those American ESPN shows. And if we had that today, I'd point out David Benefield said Barry Wilburn won the Super Bowl MVP. And I looked it up. He had two interceptions in that Super Bowl. So he could have won the MVP and probably should have won the MVP. Another guy who did win a Super Bowl MVP was Alvin Walton. He won one with the Washington Football Club that had a different name back then.
Yeah.
And he blocked two kicks in the Grey Cup, the first ever Grey Cup that was on Taylor Field.
Oh.
That was the difference between the American expansion teams and the Canadian teams. Our special teamers are some kid from Saskatchewan or Manitoba who, some farm kid usually, who plays with a lot of heart.
Yep.
And the American teams had an ex-Super Bowl MVP. So that kind of goes to show the why they needed to level the playing field. But I was talking about Brett Rypien. He is still 27 years young and still property of the New York Jets. But something small like saying, being a Canadian quarterback will count against the ratio if you're a starter. That has NFL quarterbacks excited.
Interesting.
And it might help lure some of those guys up north.
I hope it does. I really do. I mean, this is a great league to get your feet wet and get some playing experience if you're an American. And Nathan Rourke certainly proved that even if you're a Canadian, if you get some top-notch CFL experience, you can leverage that into some pretty decent cash down south.
Is there any chance that New England does not draft a quarterback really high?
Well, they just apparently got rid of Mac Jones, their draft pick from Alabama. So that's good news for Nathan Rourke.
It was like a trade because they sent Mac back to Jacksonville where Rourke came from.
That'll learn him. Yep. We'll keep the Canadian kid. You take this, the bum.
But it goes to show you that the Patriots are higher on see more upside with Nathan Rourke than they do with Mac Jones. Part of it is probably salary considerations, but
they've also got a high draft pick this year, so they may end up taking one of those five quarterbacks that everyone's gaga about. But still, it's good for Nathan Rourke that he could beat out a kid from the University of Alabama.
Do you have any optimism that he could win the starting job, at least for now, while they get the young guy ready?
No.
You don't think there's any chance? The best he can hope for is be the number two, watch the kid play, and if the kid falls flat on his face, maybe he'll get a shot, or if the kid gets injured.
Do I think he should have a shot? Absolutely. Yeah, he's proven that he's capable of leading an offense, and he's hanging around the NFL for a reason. They obviously see something in him, but will he get that shot? I don't think so, sadly. Hope I'm wrong. To be wrong.
He'd probably be happy with a number two.
Yeah, I think so. Well, then you're just you're literally a hit away from getting into the game, and you're making some pretty nice money.
Spring home show winner today. We don't have the drum roll. Sharon Datchuk from Ben Goff. Congratulations. The winner of two tickets to the Spring Home and Garden Show. Sorry, I'll say that again. The Regina Spring Home Show is what they're calling it this year. And that is next weekend, March 22nd. To 24th, so not this coming weekend, but the one after.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Congratulations to Sharon Datchuk from Ben Goff. And you too can win by texting the keyword to our Capital Ford Lincoln text line, 306-936-6262. We will have a different keyword every day, all week, on the Sports Cage.
Oh.
So make sure you listen live so that you can text in for your chance to win those tickets. Yeah, I don't know. I thought
Do the promotions people know five words? Like, are they going to double up on any? Just wondering.
Zing. By the way, we'll be doing the Sports Cage on Friday from the Brandt Center.
Fun.
The Pats will be playing that night. Mm-hmm. And I looked it up before the end of the regular season. This will be your team, your jersey night.
Hmm.
So I think they're encouraging everybody to just wear your jersey to come to the Brandt Center. But on before the end of the season, a week from then, they are going to have a 50th reunion celebration for the 74 Memorial Cup champs.
So cool.
I wonder if Norm Fong's going to show up.
Mm.
I'm sure he will.
Hope Mike Wierzchowski's there. Good man, Mike.
I got to cover the 40th reunion of the 66 Saskatchewan Roughriders, first team that ever won a Grey Cup.
Okay.
And I remember Ron Lancaster saying they decided to do it 40 instead of at 50.
Because
some of us might not be around. He says, I think they made a good call. And he's kind of snickered. And wouldn't you know it? Ronnie didn't make it to the 50th.
Imagine.
And neither did a few others. So,
prophetic words.
And unfortunately, that's the case with the Pats, with Clark Gillies and a few others who will not be there.
I think that applies to a lot of things in life. At least I wish it would. Celebrate them while they're around. Celebrate them while they're here. Sure, all the pros and all the praise after the fact is nice, I guess, for the families. But yeah, I mean, these guys did something amazing. So let's not wait 50 years.
I thought Tony La Russa, I forgot his name for a second. I get him and Lasorda mixed up.
I think Tony La Russa gets mixed up.
I thought it was great when he came out at 76 and managed the White Sox and made the playoffs.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought that was a kick in the you-know-what to all the younger managers.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress. When the Cardinals won the World Series in 2011, it was one of the greatest World Series ever. Seven-game series. They beat the Texas Rangers, got in through wild card, et cetera, et cetera. And Tony La Russa got up at the parade at the mic, and he said, I know you'll appreciate these guys. At the 10-year celebration, the 20-year celebration, the 30-year, and everybody cheered. Why not do it that way? Do it every 10 years.
It's okay for me. No, absolutely. I mean, give these guys a chance to relive some memories. Give the fans a chance to relive some memories and also get together with these guys in an informal setting. It's a great idea. Why wait?
You cannot over-celebrate. We will continue on the Sports Cage back to wrap when we come back. This is Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Saskatchewan's best coverage of the Saskatchewan Roughriders is on the Sports Cage right here on the mighty 620 CKRM.
Brendan McGuire, Pete Pascoe, and Colson Scholes with you on the Monday Sports Cage for the Kinexus Arts Center. Barney Shinkruk will be in tomorrow. We'll just go back and forth throughout the week and just piece this thing together.
Okay.
Did you watch any of the Trade Center coverage?
I can never get excited about that as an entertainment option. I follow what's going on and who's getting sent where, but in terms of sitting down in front of the TV or in front of the computer and watching for hours on end, no thank you.
I would almost try to make it a made-for-TV event, and here's how you do that.
Okay.
Put a freeze on, like a four-week freeze or a six-week freeze, and then open it up for the one day.
Oh, my. That would get crazy. Well, of course, all the general managers would be working behind the scenes during that time period and would have the deals ready to go anyway.
Right.
But it'd still be interesting.
Yeah, put them in the desk drawer. Think of how many deals would fall apart.
Probably. Guys get injured in 4 to 6 weeks. So those trades would probably go by the wayside.
If you're going to have a made-for-TV event, I think that would be the way to do it. That they've done that with the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely unwatchable now for me.
Yes.
So is the NHL draft.
Like, people keep wondering if the CFL will do anything. Okay, but what? Because the other drafts are not overly exciting.
I just don't think the CFL draft would ever be exciting. And I'm just being honest, because most of the star players are not part of the draft.
True.
Certainly
not when they get to the league initially.
And even if you tried to include the American players as part of the draft, I don't think that would be interesting either, because it would be so unpredictable.
True.
The only way you could have the draft is if you have it like as training camps are starting, literally like days before training camps start, and you would decide, or your teams would be able to decide, okay, these guys have not been drafted by the NFL and they have not been signed by the NFL, so we are going to draft them.
And that's where the whole Negless thing comes in as well. How many guys can you squirrel away on that?
I think it's 50.
Oh my goodness.
Do you like the fact they keep that quiet? It's a confidential list?
No.
Does it matter?
No. Once a guy's on there, who cares? I mean, they're your exclusive property for the next little while, however long that lasts. So doesn't really matter if anyone else knows.
Well, other teams have access to it, but the fans don't have access to it.
So what would it hurt if they did?
Yeah, I don't understand either. And then they do these partial list releases, I think during bowl season, because they want people to get excited about watching these bowls. Hey, this quarterback for East Carolina is on Edmonton's nag list.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like some of the times the names they use are just absurd. Hey, Jaden Daniels from LSU is playing. He's on the, who cares? He's not coming to the CFL anytime soon.
Why would they put him on the nag list?
Yeah, give me some guys that might actually show up here.
For a long time, the Rough Riders were criticized because they had Steve McNair on their nag list.
Yeah, that was going to happen.
Different generation back then, but they probably thought that they had a crack. Did you know his brother was here? Fred McNair.
Right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Air McNair. He was, the quarterback room was Kent Austin, Warren Jones, Fred McNair.
Oh, wow.
But Fred had very high credentials coming from the Deep South. But as we've learned, high credentials and being a performer in this league are two completely different things. You can join in on the discussion on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line at 306-936-6262. Call us toll-free 1-866-767-0620. You know, next time we talk to Glenn Suter, I want to ask him about backup quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Who are some of the best backup quarterbacks ever? I think of the greatest backup quarterback in the Canadian Football League, and I immediately think of Ricky Foggy.
Oh, wow.
Because Matt Dunnigan would always get hurt, and Ricky would always be there, ready to pick up the slack, and Ricky never seemed to need to be the starter. He always seemed to have a smile on his face. He was just happy to be there, and he was the greatest teammate ever. And I've heard Matt Dunnigan say this many times on the TSN panel. Ricky Foggy, greatest backup quarterback ever.
Wow.
For me, it was Warren Jones, but I'm a little bit biased because my friend and I would show up at practice every day, and Warren would always sign stuff for us. He'd play catch with us. And for that very reason, he has to be number one on my list.
I would have thought Joe Barnes. That was a guy that could start in the league and did, but he was the ultimate backup. Montreal certainly got a lot of mileage out of him, throwing him into games.
I think the biggest mistake that Joe Farragelli ever made when he was here was getting rid of Joe Barnes at the end of that 81 season, because they were called J.J. Barnagle.
Yep.
There's the legend of J.J. Barnagle. Even though they didn't make the playoffs, they had a 9-7 season, and I don't think you can call that a failure. And Papa Joe won Coach of the Year. So that offseason, they shipped Joe Barnes away, and Joe Farragelli said, well, we did some analytics that told us that most of our success came from Huffnagle. So we'll find another guy. I think Joe 740 Adams, sorry, I call him 740, 747 Adams.
Well, so he never completed anything either. So 740 is good.
he was on scene. So I think that Joe saw something with Joe Adams.
Rocket arm.
Well, in Dave Ridgway's book, he says that he thinks, or he hints at the fact he thinks that he saw Warren Moon in Joe Adams. So the difference was Warren Moon was a level-headed, natural-born leader. Joe 747 Adams wasn't.
Was not.
Right. And right after the trade happened to get Joe Barnes out of town, John Huffnagle wasn't excited about getting to be the everyday starter. Apparently, he went to the coaches and asked, well, what happens to J.J. Barnagle?
Huh. Interesting.
He loved the camaraderie that the two of them had in the quarterback room. And when you look at the history of what happened with Joe Farragelli with the Rough Riders, they had that 11-year playoff drought right in the middle. That was the best. That was the crescendo of all those years. That was the best team they had. That was the best shot they had at breaking the drought, because they fell right back into a nosedive after that. They weren't good the next year or the year after or the year after, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was probably Joe Farragelli's biggest blunder, was to break them up. But it's kind of amazing that we've never seen anything like that.
True.
In the 50-some years since.
Well, so many starters have, what's the best way of describing it? Thin skin when it comes to that sort of thing. They don't want to share the number one spot. They don't want to share the spotlight. They want to be in there. Even if they're struggling, they want to be in there because, coach, let me play through it. I'll get through it. We'll be fine. So for a starter or two guys that could be starters to accept the tag team scenario, that's impressive in terms of team guys.
That's pretty rare. That's why Henry Burris had his best years in Calgary and not Saskatchewan.
Unchallenged in Calgary.
And part of the condition was, I think they didn't they sign Hank and then released Kahari Jones the same day because they had Kahari Jones under contract, who had still played some of his best football, or he had recently played some of his best football, and that was the issue. He didn't want to compete with Nealon Green, and that probably goes down as maybe Roy Shiver's biggest blunder.
Probably. I'd say it's got to be right near the top. I think about what Henry Burris could have accomplished if he had stayed here. It stings a little bit. It does. But if he was determined to move on, then what are you going to do?
He was such a perfect fit here, and I thought that Brendan Tamman maybe erred in not finding a way to convince the Ottawa Redblacks to trade Hank here when Darian Durant got injured midway through the 2014 season. Because if they had pulled that off, oh my goodness.
That would have been, because that team in 2014 was good. I mean, they had just come off a Grey Cup victory. They were rolling, and then Darian got hurt.
I think they were 8-2.
Yep, I believe so.
And it just all came apart. Zzt. As it always does, eventually.
You lose the man, it's going to be a problem.
Well, we survived.
I knew we could.
That'll do it for the Monday edition of the Sports Cage. Special thank you to Colson Scholes and all of our guests, John Podbelski and Noah Picton, as well as Doug Johnson from the Melville Millionaires, David Benefield, and Taylor Shire. This has been a presentation of Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Today's Sports Cage has come to a close. Miss a segment? Download or stream the podcast now at sportscage.ca. Get your sports straight from the source. 620 CKRM.